general discussion. I guess you'll be carrying the water on this one, Joe, for the moment.
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Nate Pamplin. Jill Storrs stepped out of the office here, so I guess we'd just turn it to you to see if there's any general discussion among the commissioners.
Commissioner Smith, Mr. Vice Chair. Yes, last week I spent, or was it 2 weeks ago now, Monday and Tuesday, accompanying Ann and met with about 25 senators and representatives and had very interesting talks with all of them, managed to find good common ground with most of them. It was more or less a meet and greet for myself. Some of them I did know, some I hadn't met before, but as usual, Ann did an outstanding job, and she is certainly well respected when you walk through the halls over there down the street. But I would be happy to answer any questions or address any questions if anybody had any about individual meetings. We could do that separately or not take up the time now. And I did also want to welcome our two new commissioners. I've had the pleasure of meeting Commissioner Thornburn. I haven't had the honor of meeting Commissioner Grable yet, but I look forward to that.
As we all do. Any other general discussion?
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Commissioner Caney.
Yes, Commissioner Caney.
I didn't catch who was in the room. I came late to the call, but I hear that Nate's there, and I don't know if Mick's there or not, but I think maybe a quick discussion on where we're headed with the dating issue would be appropriate.
Very good.
And I can start it off if you'd like.
Please do so.
Okay. So at the end of the Moses Lake meeting, I kind of had the feeling, and I think I suggested as such, that maybe we were pushing ahead. I recognize the amount of work that's gone into this, and it's a lot by staff and meetings and surveys, and that's commendable. But I came away with the feeling after listening to a lot of the testimony and tried to read almost as many of the comments as I could. There was, 1,500 comments. I know it's a very important issue to the people that hunt in our state. And I felt, based on that, the testimony I heard, and I came away with a different thought than I had coming into the meeting, that maybe we don't need to push ahead quite as fast, that we've had baiting as being legal for elk and deer forever in this state, and we're about to make a change that can affect a lot of folks, and maybe it can deserve a little more time and attention and whatnot. After I returned home, of course, I got bombarded by some of my Mule Deer Foundation members that are definitely against baiting. They felt, too, that maybe we were moving too fast. They're very willing to listen to different sides of the issue and come up with more of a compromised position. Then I had an interesting talk on the way home from Seattle yesterday with Lee Davis, who's president of Utah Field and Stream Club, or vice president, or past president, I think. And he kind of opened my eyes a little bit because I was under the feeling that, the GMSC was a pretty strong vote no, that just stay in the status quo. And I think listening to what he said, he felt more that they felt that was the best of the options presented, that they didn't feel they could vote for any other option, and more or less that maybe if they were given more ideas, having a little more time, they might have voted differently or come up with some different thoughts, different ideas. And I was reminded also of the letter that WDFW put out in Okanagan County about feeding deer December 16, 2014, which had a lot of quotes in there from Kristen Mansfield, the WDFW veterinarian. Here's one. Fruits and grains are not a normal part of a deer's diet and can be extremely difficult for deer to digest. Such high carbohydrate fare can elevate animal stomach acid levels and cause serious illness and even death. They went on to talk about, you know, pulling deer into an area that can cause disease and also other problems with herds. I felt at the meeting in Moses Lake, the feeling in the room was that it was totally a social issue. And I don't believe that to be true at all, at least with all the people I've talked to. You know, it's not a huge population issue, but I think there is definitely a biological issue here that we need to consider, that the amount of feeding that goes on in certain parts of the states can have a detrimental effect to individual deer and possibly even larger numbers of deer. I also recognize that some of the problem, probably a big part of the problem that we see with baiting is occurring right where I live in Okanagan County, with massive excessiveness of apples being put out by particular guides and individuals. That's totally illegal right now and yet could cause a lot of damage, I believe, and a lot of people here do too. So, and then I also had a conversation with Mick, and as we discussed this a little bit more, we were throwing around ideas of, you know, well, what is a reasonable middle ground? If it's not 10 pounds, is it 30 pounds? Is it a barrel of apples? Is it, you know, grain, alfalfa? You know, just trying to come up with a little better option, I guess, for the commission to consider. But having said all that, I still feel rushed. And I feel if the decision is put before us at the meeting in April, which I plan to call into from my vacation, do we have to move that fast? And me and I actually talked about it a little, and then some of the folks that were, you know, at the March meeting testifying against baiting, Matt Marsh is a biologist with the Forest Service. I haven't got a hold of Jared Gibbons, but I would suggest that we throw together some people where the problem occurs, let them put their heads together, and kind of an ad hoc committee or whatnot, or an ad hoc advisory group is put together just for this purpose. There are several people also at the meeting that I think I talked to that said they would love to be a part of that and help find some common ground or a way to do this. Maybe staff feels they've put enough time and effort into it and want to be done with it. I can understand that too, but voting for status quo at the April meeting will probably table this issue for many years, and I don't feel that's correct. And I would hate to see us do that because we have not come up with enough options that make enough sense to enough people and yet don't cause harm to the folks that are doing it in small amounts that have become accustomed. They're using it to teach their kids, you know, to enjoy wildlife, bringing hunters into the world of hunting. You know, I think I just am feeling rushed. I wanted to throw that out, let Mick or Nate talk to that and see what they think.
Good morning, commissioners. This is Nate Pamplin. Commissioner Caney, appreciate the overview. This is scheduled for a decision at your meeting next week. As towards the end of the public comment period in March, we tried to summarize the key options that are before the commission, either adopting one of the three rules, the status quo, which we'll have as a motion for you, which is to essentially take a motion to do nothing and not pass the other three rules. And then if that were the course that the commission took, you can direct staff to bring this forward for the next three-year package, or we could bring this forward for the next cycle and would recommend that would come forward if that's how you're electing to go at the March-April briefing and decision for 2016, so that any rule change could be incorporated in a hunting pamphlet well in advance of the start of a hunting season. So those are the options that are in front of the commission.
Any comments?
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Wecker.
I just wanted to express some appreciation to Commissioner Caney for thinking about this as carefully, deliberately, thoroughly as he obviously has. And I like a lot of his comments. I, too, think that it's always a good idea to give a lot of thought, careful consideration, give ourselves enough time to come to the right place, especially if the stakeholders are with us in doing that. So we've seen this is a contentious issue, obviously. We need to give it the time it requires, and we're not making the decision right now, obviously, but I just wanted to say that what Commissioner Caney just expressed was pretty compelling from my perspective.
Thank you. Mr. Vice Chair?
Yes, Mr. Smith, please.
I think, and I second what Commissioner Weckler said. The way it was portrayed in our last meeting in Moses Lake was, as Commissioner Keeney said, a social issue. And I really would like to address the nutrition aspect more, because that could have or would have serious consequences. And I think it was glossed over in Moses Lake. It was almost as an afterthought raised by the one or two individuals that commented. And I think it was dismissive just to think of this as a social issue. So I think that alone, studying the nutritional aspects, are worthy of more conversation. And it would be educational for me as well.
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Dave Graybill.
Yes, Mr. Graybill.
I agree with this current discussion. I have a meeting next week with Region 2 department staff, and we're going to address this issue among other changes. But I am encouraged by this discussion to take a closer look at this and examine the science. And also, I know this is an important issue, and baiting, as Mr. Keeney mentioned, has been sort of a hunting tradition, and it also, I'm aware of it improving access. It's an aid for hunters of senior years and also of youngsters, that we need to examine the science of this and find the correct approach to it. So I agree with this discussion, and it should be further examined.
Thank you, Commissioner Bell. Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Commissioner Thorber, and I've been thinking a lot about this one, too. Just in terms of the science, I know with other wildlife, feeding an aberrant diet impacts reproductivity. So I just would encourage that as we think about the science, it not just be adult population impact, but reproductivity, anything that's known about it, anything that can be found out about it as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Sorbent. Nate, this is Commissioner Carpenter. I guess I might ask, at our meeting next week, I am suspecting now we can have a briefing on this and come up with a timeline, how much time we actually have in order to get this on board for the 2015 hunting season. Your thoughts on that?
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Nate. It will depend on what the commission elects to do with the vote. If one of the other WACs that are proposed are adopted, we'll be able to include that within the hunting pamphlet. If there's a status quo, that's also very straightforward. If it's going to be either pushed to the next three-year package, or if it's pushed to a committee, I would recommend that if that's done, that we bring it back through a normal hunting rule cycle. So either the three-year package or next year, such that the public briefing on and the proposed rule would be, you know, the proposed rule would be filed, the CR-101 in December of 2015, draft rules for public comment in February of 16, public briefing in March of 16, and adoption in April of 16 to be included in the big game pamphlet for 2016, rather than have it sometime earlier before that. Understand the motivation here to kind of keep momentum going and the ad hoc committee, but having a change that's adopted that's a separate notification that's not included in the pamphlet, I think presents some challenges.
Well, that was a great explanation. Thank you, Nate. Anyone else?
Commissioner
Keeney.
Thank you, Nate. I appreciate the understanding where we're at, and I came away from Moses Lake as well with, you know, listening to the testimony. Bobby gave a great testimony. The young man, Matt, that talked about his son going out with him and wanting to see him see his wife shoot a deer over a small amount of bait. I really started to realize that it's your perspective of where you live and the topography and the type of deer that you hunt that make this either a big problem to you or just something that's just part of how you hunt and not a real big situation. So I came away feeling like there are some medium measures we can take in this that have as few of unintended consequences as possible. And that's what I would like to suggest, is that we take another year, and like you suggest, put it in the 2016 schedule to make a decision on it, be a year from now. And in the meantime, you know, put some of that work back out to possibly myself and Commissioner Graybill, and we can work with some of the sporting groups, you know, have a kind of a ad hoc group put together and include all the people that would be affected, whether that's the guide like Jared who testified, along with others from this area that I know are opposed to baiting, and tell them there's the option of status quo and the option of doing away with baiting altogether are off the table. Let's come up with something better. And I would suggest that we do that rather than taking a vote of status quo, which kind of ends the issue, I think. I think we should send a message to the public. It's too important to end. We're going to continue on, postpone this for a year. It's not like we haven't been doing it for 50 or 100 years anyway, and come up with something that more people can get on board behind.
Mr. Vice Chair?
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, I strongly support that. I think it's a wise course of action. And as that deliberation unfolds, I think it's really important to look at what other states have come up with that are similar to us. Because Mick or Nate, I mean, what was it? There's only a handful of states that allow baiting, right?
Commissioner Smith, that's correct. Of the western states, I think.
Right. So that, given that, there must be, you know, formulas that have worked there, or at least are working in some of the other states that we could view as some sort of models, or, you know, in terms of amount being put out. Do these other states ban it totally? Do they do the one bucket, two buckets? You know, so I'd like to see a little comparative analysis done too.
And Mr. Vice Chair, if I could jump in, this is Nate again. I think, you know, all really good discussion for today. I think this will be important for the commission to have this discussion when you're planning to make the decision on those rules for next week.
That would seem appropriate. Any other comments on that item?
This is Commissioner Keeney, Mr. Vice Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Keeney.
Yeah, just a question for you, Nate. At the April meeting, and through the discussion, and if we reach a conclusion that the commission can support, to postpone the decision a year, including continued work on it to find out more of possible solutions that more people could accept, does that fit okay with you in terms of, I know the 102 and all that, there's been a lot of work gone into it, but I'm hoping that what I'm trying to say is I think we can take some of that burden off of just staff and work on it. Does that fit okay with you?
Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioner Keeney, I really appreciate you asking that question. I think given what I've been hearing from Commissioner sentiment, and if this is the decision that's reached next week, I think that's reasonable, that will certainly assist in staffing whatever ad hoc committee of either GMAC or other members of the interested public to help craft some new rule proposals to bring back for 2016. I think that's a sounds like a good approach.
Okay, thank you, Nate.
Do we have any other discussion on this item or any other items this morning?
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Jim Unsworth. Sorry that I wasn't here the whole time. I was at a recreational meeting, or a meeting with some recreational folks, mostly discussing some fee legislation and some strategy for the future. We're going to have another meeting with those folks this afternoon at 3. They've agreed to get together with us and make some legislative contacts. I think I'll let Joe maybe give us a quick update on where we're at with the budgets, the House budget and the Senate budget, and just maybe where the commercial legislation's at. And I think you've gotten a couple of memos, one from me and one from Ann, but I'll give Joe just a minute to kind of bring you up on that.
Hey, thank you, Director. Thank you, or good morning, Commissioners, again. As the Director said, you should have received an April 1st memo that described in detail the additions and reductions in the Governor's, in the House, and in the Senate budgets, and then in addition on the 31st on Tuesday, Ann Larson sent out a legislative update that had a lot of detail on the bills that we're tracking and the ones that we've been, you know, most involved with. So be happy to try to answer questions about either of those two memos, but wanted to focus a little bit on what we're seeing in the House and the Senate budget. We've got about a little over 3 weeks to go in the regular session. It is scheduled to end on the 26th. And last Thursday, we received the House budget and got a glimpse for the first time of what the House was thinking. Their budget includes about $1.4 billion in new taxes, not the governor's proposed strategy of a carbon tax, but B&O and capital gains, a variety of bottled water taxes, a variety of new taxes. The Senate budget came out last Tuesday and was a no new revenue budget, so very different philosophical approach. And I described the director describes that in the memo. There's some more detail there. As we look at those two budgets, we think we have about somewhere around a $10 million deficit, $10 million problem statement. And that's made up of about $4 million in necessary activities to offset federal cuts, activities related to the HGMPs, the hatchery genetic management plans, and all the NOAA review there, various necessary maintenance activities at hatcheries, and several other ocean and Puget Sound fishery needs. So about $4 million, all of those activities have been part of the fee discussion with the recreational and commercial fishers that we started last summer. When the governor's budget came out, and then again with the House and the Senate, there's an additional $6 million or so dollars of need associated with increased benefits, collective bargaining agreements, other cost of living increases. So when we add those up, and we've got about a $10 million problem statement, about six and a half of that would be a burden on the fish program, on the fish side of things. And then the rest would be spread across the agency. So we're actively trying to get to the specifics on that whole package in terms of what would be lost, That's been a big part of the conversation that we've had with the recreational community and the commercial fishing community. As the director mentioned, we had another call with the recreational community this morning, and we're going to follow up on that with a 3 o'clock call this afternoon. And then we've got a 1 o'clock call with the commercial fishers, most of whom seem to be willing to support a commercial fee increase. I think the director characterized it as, you know, we're at the 11th hour, 11th hour plus, and we'll see if we can pull a rabbit out of our hat here, but we're looking at a fairly significant set of issues here in terms of reductions. Happy to answer any questions.
Joe, in Moses Lake, you passed out a one-pager to some of us just for our own review. Has that the items listed on that one-pager changed at this point? Or?
No. That's what I was referring to, Commissioner Carpenter. If you look at that document, there's one side that has $6.4 million in funding that we had hoped to achieve by a fishing license increase.
Right.
Two of those, there's seven items on there. Two of those seven items would have been enhancements. So obviously we're not going to do those. But the other five would be, we would have to find dollars by stopping some other activity, or we wouldn't be able to do those kinds of activities. And so if you still have that document, you can see what's involved there. On the flip side of that page, we had a list of reductions across the agency that amounted to about $7.4 million. And with this, with these cost of living increases, with, you know, collective bargaining, pension benefits, et cetera, with those impacts, we would be, you'd probably see us looking hard at three-quarters, four-fifths of that second page in terms of reductions that we would have to take.
Right, right.
So it's a pretty ugly picture.
Thank you for that explanation, Joe. Any other discussion?
Did anyone from the North of Falcon team join us?
This is Jim Scott.
Yeah, commissioners, if we have time, I'd like to get a brief update on our North of Falcon negotiations, and Jim's here to deliver that.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, Jim Scott.
Yes, Jim, good morning. Take it away.
Okay. So we had a meeting with all tribes for the last 3 days and with our stakeholders on one of those days. And I would say it was a very productive discussion both with our stakeholders and with the tribes. The tribes, we started off with a, what we call a plenary session on Tuesday morning with both the tribes and our stakeholders. And I would characterize that as a very strong and urgent appeal from the tribes, expressing concerns about what they, their perspectives on the status of stocks and the fisheries that the department has proposed. So I would say it characterizes as a bit of a rocky start, but after that, I thought things improved substantially. We came out of it, I think, with the department's four key recreational proposals still on the table, very strong staff presentations on the schedule approach to recreational fisheries, the minimum size limit, the two-pole option for Area 11, and the marked selective fishery for Area 7. I think we had very strong staff discussions of those. And the tribal response, I would certainly characterize as cool, particularly with respect to the fishery schedule idea, but not an outright no on the other proposals. So that was, I think, a very good discussion yesterday. Those issues are going to remain on the table, I suspect, until we finish up at PFMC next week down in California. On the stock side, I'd say on Chinook, we're basically beginning to close in on a fishery package that would meet exploitation rate limits on most of the stocks, with the exception Lake Washington, where we've got a lot of work to do still. I think the current model runs have a projected southern U.S. exploitation rate of over 29%, with a cap of 20%, so a long ways to go on Lake Washington. Also, touched briefly on Coho at the meeting, and again, one of the key stocks there is a Canadian stock, the Interior Fraser, and depending upon what ocean option we're looking at, exploitation rates there in U.S. fisheries of around 13%, 13 to 14%, and need to get that down to 10%. So some shavings going to be needed on both inside treaty and non-treaty fisheries, and I think we're going to have to think carefully about where the ocean option falls out as well. So that's kind of a quick summary of where we're at north of Falcon. My sense is we're positioned pretty well, as best we could be, I think, and staff have done a fantastic job getting us to this point.
Thanks, Jim. Mr. Chairman, those were the two briefings I wanted to leave with the commission on this conference call.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Okay, hearing none, if we have no other comments, I will close this meeting. This is the Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting for April 3rd. It is now, 2015 is now 9:11. We are now adjourning.